45 degrees in downtown Denver. Good afternoon, Colorado. It is Friday, the final one of the month of October. This is the penultimate Friday program. One more week to go after today, and it is a pleasure as we wrap up a wonderful week of live and local radio with national and international stories of note. I greatly thank you for joining us. Stephen Tubbs, Jim Nichols at the controls, Lori Kelman in the newsroom. We've got one of my all-timers. I know I've been giving you for the last 2 months all-timers, but former Rockies pitcher Jason Hirsch, who is on top of current events. He made it through COVID as a small business owner, barely. We're going to have the pleasure of having Jason. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff, and he's in here for the hour. Of course, you can take part in the conversation. I always enjoy that, and it's one of the things I will miss most. 303-696-1971. Text the studio via the free-to-download app. Social media, of course, at Tubbs Show, T-U-B-B-S Show, Facebook and Twitter /X. If you are listening live stream right now, welcome wherever you are. Of course, live stream audio via the app or the website. And commercial break free podcast, Jim will put up every hour of every show we do. Actually, I think because Jim's got football tonight, these shows today, let's say tomorrow morning, will be up and commercial break free for you. Before we get to Jason Hirsch in studio, there is movement. Like literally, and rockets are flying as we speak. Israel has begun the Gaza ground invasion.
Hamas released an earlier statement saying that this is the time to carry your weapons. That statement was directed at their Palestinian brethren across the region, specifically in the West Bank, because they are trying to reach out from the Gaza Strip to others around the region to try to wrap them in. Saying that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been engaging in genocide, and now is the time to act.
Innocencio Ramey with CBS News in Tel Aviv.
The head of UNRWA, the UN agency providing humanitarian relief, said the focus on aid convoys getting into Gaza had become a distraction because, he said, they were only delivering crumbs. Philippe Lazzarini said fuel must be allowed to enter.
Basic services are crumbling. Medicine is running out. Food and water are running out. The streets of Gaza have started overflowing with sewage. Gaza is on the brink of a massive health hazard as the risk of diseases are looming.
Now listen, there are some of you listening right at this moment that you've never, ever bought into the United Nations. You've never been a fan. You've never been a part. You've been pissed off that we do all of this as a country, as the United States, and then these other countries that are part of a UN, say committee, or they're part of this or that, and they don't pay their due, whatever it is, whatever it is. Would you believe then, especially if you think that way, would you believe that there are certain mixed messages coming from out of the United Nations in New York? This is the UN ambassador from Canada to the United Nations.
Any life lost is a tragedy. There is no hierarchy of death. Yet the critical reason for how we got here has already been forgotten by so many, as if it never happened. But just 2 weeks ago, Hamas terrorists killed over 1,400 Israelis, not even mentioned in the comments by my friend from Jordan.
So the UN ambassador from Canada, is he talking out of his backside? All of a sudden, we've got ambassadors from around the globe, including the one he was referencing from Jordan, not even really mentioning Hamas or a massacre. Friends, you know as well as I do, that's how this started. That's how this started, with a massacre. For God's sake, they were paragliding in to a music festival, and they slaughtered there at least 260 people, more than 1,400 Jews, the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust. And now what are we? Are we pulling a Denver in decay here, that we don't want to offend anybody, that we don't want to, you know, we don't want to incite? What are we talking about here? We're not wanting to incite what? A terror group known as Hamas? I think the inciting has been done. They started this. Oh, I know. I can hear from college campus to college campus, from coast to coast. Wait a minute, what about the Zionist state and what Israel has done over it? Look, this is, can you live in the moment? Can you live in the moment? And the moment is 1,400 Jews have been slaughtered in less than the past month. With that, on a happy note, I want to welcome in my friend and, man, I've known you longer than I actually thought. It's Jason Hirsch, former Rockies pitcher, and I hate introducing you like that because that was part of your, it'd be like former KOA.
That was a previous life.
I know.
At this point.
Exactly.
Like 15 years ago.
I know.
You're old.
I am older. A lot older than you. Brother, thank you. You are an awesome father, an awesome husband, an awesome small business owner, and we've had you on, especially during COVID. You know, hey, how are those executive orders treating you today, Hirsch? But I really want to start. You are Jewish.
Yep.
How do you follow what is going on for the past almost a month?
I follow it very closely. Obviously, it does hit home. I'm one of the few major league players that's ever claimed Jewish heritage. I believe there's just over 200 in the history of the game, and you're talking 22,000 or so players. So I wear that as a badge of honor. So all of the stuff that's going on in the Middle East is definitely it's tough to watch, but I think we were talking a little bit off air. Like, I knew that there would be sympathy early, but I knew eventually the tides would turn to the other table where it's like, well, they've done enough. Now we have to think about these other people. And I'm like, they started this. You know, you poked the wrong bear in this. You can't expect to start a fight and not finish it.
Well, what I find fascinating is what did Palestine sympathizers, of which I am one, I'm in favor of that cliche two-state solution. I'm in favor of two states. It's the solution that'll never happen. But, I mean, what did the global community expect Israel to do? Call a ceasefire and say, okay, now we'll go to the bargaining table?
Yeah, it's one of those things where this is not just a singular event, right? They keep poking and prodding. They fire rockets, you know, this week and then next week and then the week after that. And obviously the Iron Dome system does a remarkable job of stopping those. And then they did this bigger version of this, right? And there's obviously some conspiracy theories around how they were able to execute this with, you know, Mossad being the greatest intelligence agency in the world. How do you know that this not know that this was going to happen? So, you know, there is some conspiracy about how this started. But at this point, it's not anymore about how it started. Now it's about the reaction. And now it's turned into, well, now this is an overreaction. Imagine, if you will, if Mexico was Palestine and they were launching rockets into Arizona and New Mexico and Texas. What do you think the United States' response would be to Mexico?
Depends on the administration.
Well, but, you know, if you try and visualize what that's like, that's what we're dealing with here, right? Like, you don't just let people assault you and not defend yourself, right? And then allowing them to dictate the level of which you are allowed to defend yourself, I think is preposterous.
We got a ton of stuff to cover with Jason Hirsch. He's a longtime friend and friend of the program as well. And, you know, we're going to get into those executive orders during COVID and I guess we could spend the next hour talking just this issue, but I do want to move on. But I did ask you off the air. I want to ask you on. I have made it pretty damn clear, especially over the last couple of weeks on the program. Call me naive. Call me ill-informed. I had no idea that seemingly the level of anti-Semitism in this country was that close to the surface. How have you, first your reaction to that, and how have you watched, you know, what's going on coast to coast?
Yeah, you know, when I first got into professional baseball, I wear a mezuzah around my chest. It's I always tell people it's the Jewish equivalent of a cross, even though it might be a little bit different in actual terms. But you know, when I would be in a locker room, people would see that hanging around. I would say, you know, I would say just that, but I'm like, I'm Jewish, you know, it's not a big deal. But the people that were advising me, my agent, you know, the people that were helping me guide my path through the big leagues, they said, don't make this well known because there's still a lot of people in this country that don't like you just for that sheer fact.
Hearing that, I have my reaction, but what was more importantly, what was yours?
It actually made me scared to think that, because I mean, I grew up in Southern California, and you know, I went to a Catholic high school and a Lutheran college. It's a weird story. We can get into it later if you want. It is. But I always tell people I learned a ton about my own faith at those institutions than I probably would have ever learned on my own, because I like to joke I put the ish in Jewish. I'm probably the most religious in my family, most observant Jew. But when I was at Kalu, we made light of that. Like we had fun with it. They called me the Hebrew Hammer, and you know, they used to, you know, we used to have a lot of fun with it. But then when it came to play pro ball, and now I'm going off to play on the East Coast in some of these small rural towns, you know, they were saying, you can't do that. Like, don't tell people to call you the Hebrew Hammer or make light of that fact because of those reasons. And so, yes, I was scared initially, and I tried to hide it as much as I could. Now, going back to the second part of your question, how do I react to what I've seen today? Clearly, this has been a festering pimple that has been popped, right? And it's been under the surface, and everything that the left has accused the right of being, they're themselves guilty of. And, you know, you're seeing all of the anti-Semitism on school campuses, in, you know, these education centers. You're seeing it in streets, and it seems to be allowed.
Tolerated if not allowed.
Right, where if this was anything else, it would be squashed immediately. And so the idea that this is pervasive enough to be allowed is scary if you're a Jew and living, you know, here in October of 2023.
Jason Hirsch is our guest. He'll be here for the hour as part of the farewell tour. Before we move on to some more topics, we'll get traffic and weather for you coming up. Why do you think, you have been asked this question, maybe you've asked it yourself, why are most Jews liberals?
That's a great question. I can't answer it. I don't understand it. It seems to be against their best interests. And it's not like a recent thing either. I think it's more historical. And you know, my parents were, I don't know if they still are, mm-hmm. Democrat, you know, mine. I grew up in that. And, you know, politics wasn't what it is today, right? Where it's infused in every corner and aspect of our lives. It was more of, you know, behind closed doors. But I get asked that question a lot by my friends, my Christian friends, my Catholic friends, my Lutheran friends. Like, why, you know, I believe there's actually a book, Why Are Jews Liberal? I don't know the answer to it. I really don't, because it just feels like, you know, I don't know if they've been convinced otherwise through, you know, the language that has been going on or the finger pointing that has been going on, you know, the toxicity from whatever, you know, aspect of the politics that they're getting into. But they seem to have sided, and it feels like they've sided with the wrong people. Like it just doesn't feel like that's the place based on historical things, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, obviously the Holocaust and, you know, the media and the way they perceived it even back then, and who is controlling all of these things. And even today, who controls, you know, the educational institutions and the government institutions. And it feels like it really doesn't serve their best interest. And listen, they may not even feel like the right side or Republicans are the right place to be either, but it feels like it's worse on the other side.
Jason, you know what happened? I'm not equating fully what happened to Jews and the 6 million who were exterminated in World War II and in the 40s. But you know from looking at the past, what happens when things are tolerated or when people don't speak up? And that is, full disclosure, that is one of my biggest concerns with this right now.
So what is that saying? That, you know, first they came for, you know, the Jews and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew, right? And then eventually they came for the Christians and nobody was left to speak up for me.
Yeah.
Right? So it is one of those things. It's scary, you know, as a citizen, you know, as a father, husband, you know, just the idea that especially in today's culture, if I speak out about this, I fear the retribution. I fear what people would do to me physically, or I fear what they're going to do to my business or to my family's health and well-being. Like, it's difficult for people who are in this position to speak up, right? And you know, everybody calls them brave, this, that, and the other, but honestly, there should be more doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like it's not the Jews that are speaking up. It's more of like my friends who are Christians and Catholics. They're the ones going, we stand behind you. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's great. But, you know, nobody else is vocalizing this, at least on a national level.
This is to me, brother, this is where people, you climb on top of that proverbial mountain and you scream and you protest. Real quick, I wanted to mention, we, of course, left you last night right around 7 o'clock, and they're still looking. The manhunt is still on for this guy, mass murderer in the state of Maine. Can you believe they haven't got this guy yet?
Yeah, he's either really sneaky or they're really bad at finding him. Or he's dead. I mean, I've got some friends up there who were former law enforcement, and they kind of keep me updated on what they are hearing. Uh-huh. You know, the initial reports that came out, the pictures, you know, I was being told that it wasn't just one person, that there were multiple people involved in this. You know, then I heard that he's, you know, former military and that he's, you know, psych ward. At this point, you would think in today's modern age, and again, I don't know the workings of Maine. You know, I call them Mainanites. I don't think that's the right term for them. But I don't understand the workings up there. But in today's modern age, the idea that you haven't found this guy yet smells a little funky. It smells of something that we may never find or never.
Do you mean like Las Vegas?
Little Vegas-y.
Yeah. Jason Ehrsch, we will take a quick time out. When we come back, I want to get into with Jason, as we love to be live and local on this program. Jared Polis comments like this.
There's always Coloradans who are ignorant and selfish.
I don't want to tell Hershey this, but I think that was directed at him. No. But how do you survive? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of executive orders during COVID. How do you survive? How did you survive as a small business owner? Jason came close to not surviving. We'll talk about his business and give him a free plug, of course. And what was that?
I said I like free plugs.
You better. You got a website, right?
I do.
Okay, stand by. Jason Ehrsch next. Stay with us, 710 KNUS. Taking you back to 2006. Hershey, this is for you. Hit it! Sing
it. This is Spilly. No, you don't want to hear me sing.
No, sing it. Go ahead.
No, I can't. I can't hit that note.
If I could escape.
Did you just suck helium out of a balloon?
You got it, Hershey.
Oh, my God.
Ryan Spielborgs, a frequent listener to this program. I don't think that's true. Let's keep this going, Jimmy.
I think he's in Texas or Arizona or wherever. Where are they opening tonight?
Texas. You know who throws out the first pitch? George W. Bush.
Let's see if it's as good as the one he threw out in 2001.
It can't get any better.
I mean, that was piped.
Hershey, this was Spilly's.
He was really good at picking the songs that you get to sing along to.
What was your walk-up song?
I didn't have one. I wasn't that good, Stefan. I'll tell you a funny story.
Dude, pitched with broken bones.
I know. I'll tell you a funny story, though. So there was a time in spring training where we got to select our walkout music. And they had a list, and you just wrote the song next to it. And I went over to the list thinking, all right, I'll go put a song down. And I was looking through it, and I got to my name. And there was already a song listed there. It was Toby Keith's "I Ain't As Good As I Once Was."
Oh, come
on! I was getting the rookie treatment.
Oh.
And it could have been any number of the veterans, but I pointed my finger at Todd as being the guy who did that.
Do you miss those days?
What, like 2000, that team, or just being in the big leagues?
That's actually a good delineator.
People ask me this a lot. I miss the clubhouse. I miss the guys. I miss hanging around them, being around them. I don't necessarily miss. I mean, I love baseball. It's what I do for a living. I don't miss being in pain or aching or whatever it is, the travel, all of that stuff. But I miss being around those guys. The locker room, clubhouse.
Yeah.
That atmosphere.
Man, 2007, what a run.
Mm-hmm. Historical. That won't ever happen again.
Hirsch.
Who did we beat in 163? I don't remember.
I hate you. Get him out of here.
I told you I was going to bring this up.
You did, actually. This just in, though it doesn't really matter now, one of the most brutal losses.
Was that like the worst day of your life?
One of. When it comes to sports, absolutely top Top.
I mean, there were 50,000 screaming fans there, and there was one who was crying.
Oh, I cried for about a week about that. You know, the funny thing is, though.
Did he touch it?
Matt Holliday still has yet to touch home plate. I love Hirsch and Tubbs.
You know what? I've been getting a lot of people sending me text messages with those old Rockies commercials.
Like, I don't know if you were in one.
I was in several of
them.
Were you? Yeah, I was
what
in
What was your favorite?
The dinger tipping, I think, was the favorite
that
one.
That was.
That was a good one. And then the pitcher's day off. Like, it was a video of, like, Francis and Cookie, and they were doing the laundry, and Holiday, I think, was cooking. And then, actually, the scene, I'm pushing a chalker down the line, listening to my headphones, mm-hmm. and the line is crooked as all get out, right? It's, like, wavy. That was actually supposed to be Kaz Matsui, and he was not to be found in the clubhouse. So they're like, Hirsch, you want to do it? I was like, sure. That was one take. Because we only had one chalker and one field to film it on.
That was a brilliant ad campaign.
Yeah, that was, I think that company was called Blue Goose or Blue Moose or something like that, because they did stuff for the Seattle Mariners as well.
Okay, so I was actually in the clubhouse one time for the filming of one of those. Mm-hmm. It was with Todd, and there was like
is that the Todd father?
There was an animal that was brought in. Was it a lamb or a goat or
that might have been the next year, next 2 years or something like that. Because they used that company for several years because ad campaign was remarkably successful.
I want to get into like the real stuff that matters to you now, but I do have to ask you since we're on the topic. I mean, does it hurt you to see how bad the Rockies are now?
Oh, 100% it does. Because I know that they could be better. And I've had conversations with people within the organization that they know that they're behind. But they're trying to catch up. And, you know, I see signs of life on occasion, but then when you watch the product on the field, it's really difficult.
Is it all about pitching?
Honestly, it's a big piece of it. You know, I think the Rockies historically have been very, very good at developing position players, you know, shortstops, third baseman, outfield, and they all hit, but they've been historically horrible at developing pitching. And so there needs to be a change in there, whether it's an adaptation to modern development tools, technology, or it's scouting or it's player development, you know, getting the right people in there and then informing these players about what's going to make them successful at the next level. These are things that Houston's done, St. Louis has done forever. You know, San Diego, I'm sure, has adopted a lot of this stuff. They're so far behind right now. It's tough to see them catch up.
What do you remember about the 2000 season? Because that's when you come on. I mean, I certainly had heard of you. You played for Houston.
Yep.
And then you're traded over here?
Yep. I got traded in December of 06. I got a voicemail left on my phone after I came out of the gym. Because in order to complete the trade, they had to make sure to let me know.
Is that sufficient enough, a voicemail?
Back then, that was what passed. So I listened to the voicemail. It was Tim Papora, who was my general manager in Houston. He said, hey, Jason, just want to let you know, you've been traded to the Colorado Rockies. We appreciate everything you've done for the organization, and we wish you the best of luck. Click. And shortly after I listened to that, I got a phone call from Dan O'Dowd, Clint Hurdle, Rick Matthews, Bob Apodaca, like all the coaching staff, front office guys welcoming me to the family. It was a gut punch when I listened to the voicemail, and then getting those phone calls and talking to them made me feel a lot better about it. But my initial thoughts when I heard it was, really, Colorado, that's the best you could do? Like, I was hoping maybe they'd trade me to like a contending organization or something like that. But
And then
2007 happened.
Just,
yeah.
You had a good, I mean, I don't have your stats.
I'll tell you what,
but I
had an okay year that year. I mean, it was my first real full year in the big leagues.
Yeah.
You know, I had two injuries. I rolled my ankle, broke my leg, which put me out for the World Series, but...
Wait. Stop. Just stop.
What? Did we miss something?
Yes, you don't... Well, no, but... I broke my leg, I twisted my leg. No,
Remember who you're talking to here.
I know. I'm going to boost you.
Okay, you do that.
Dude.
I threw six innings on a broken leg.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. Jason Hirsch, everyone.
Yeah, the second batter of the game, J.J. Hardy. They were playing the Milwaukee Brewers at home. I snuck a fastball above the letters. He swung at it. I figured I'd go back there again. He didn't miss. As my trail leg, my push-off leg, was coming through, the line drive straight from his bat, straight to my fibula, and then ricocheted over to Garrett Atkins, who threw him out at first base. I had my ankle taped. because I had rolled it a month earlier. Yeah. So it was just a precautionary thing. It hit me right on the tape. And so Scotty Garrett came out and asked me a bunch of questions. And I was like, son of a gun, that hurt.
I don't think you said gun.
No, I didn't.
Only he didn't say gun.
I'm trying to keep it PG for you here.
Yes, sir.
I threw a couple of warm-up pitches, and my leg would shake when I'd get like lift my leg to my balance point, and then I could kind of push. And, of course, I'm a stubborn pitcher, so I'm like, yeah, I'm good. Let's do this.
But then you go out again and again.
And I went out for six innings. It got stiffer and stiffer. I believe there was a moment where I had to run over to first base to try and cover it. That wasn't fun.
The old spring training drill.
Yep. I got walked by Chris Capuano and then sufficiently picked off on, I think, two pitches later because I couldn't push back.
Why did you take such a big lead, you idiot?
I don't know, because I'm a ball player. I wanted to...
He's right.
I've always dreamed of stealing a base.
You never did.
I never did. I was like, dude, I could totally get this bag right here. Yeah. 6'8" giraffe running the base paths.
And then you find
after the game, go to the clubhouse, take the tape off, and I was just hoping that there wasn't a bone sticking out, and thank God there wasn't. Scotty starts poking at it, and it made an audible click sound. And he goes, well, that's not good. So he calls Dr. Noonan, who's our orthopedic, and Noonan comes in there, and he does the same thing, makes a click. He goes, I don't think you could have pitched on a broken leg. I'll bet you it's just soft tissue. I'll send you for precautionary x-rays tomorrow. We didn't have an x-ray machine at the field then. So I go to the doctor's office, sitting on the x-ray table. I said, hey, what does it look like? They're like, we can't tell you. I said, we'll turn the screen so I can see it. And I was like, I don't need to be a doctor to tell you that's broken. So distal third fibula fracture, it was in two big pieces, and there was a little chip that had flaked off.
So I want to move on because I want to talk about what you're doing now. However, I'll, of course, ask other questions about that very topic. So, but you go, this team goes on a run that I just don't see ever being repeated, the magic of September. But you're on the, did they call it, the DL or the IL?
The DL back then.
Yeah, the DL.
We were still disabled.
Yeah, that's probably so politically incorrect today, friends. By the way, Jason Hirsch, one of my all-time faves, he's a former Rockies pitcher and small business owner here. I'm going to tell you how your kids, if they dream of being Jason Hirsch, can get in touch with Jason with coaching and his wonderful facility. But were you able to, because you're on the DL, were you still able to travel?
So, yes.
With the team?
Well, yes and no. So, once the playoffs started, anytime we were home, I was there. When the team went on the road, I went down to Tucson, which was our spring training site at the time, to rehab. I was trying to get better so that I could pitch in the World Series. So Aaron Cook had a bone bruise in his right ankle or left ankle. And so he was nursing it as well. He got back quicker than I did, and that's why he ended up pitching. I think that was game two in Boston. Mm-hmm. Or game three. No, game two in Boston.
Yeah.
That would have been my spot.
That was not a good score.
No, but that would have been my spot had I was able to get back quicker.
Have you ever looked and, you know, to the sky and just, you know, why of all the seasons?
I'll tell you, I did a lot in a very short time in my career. I went to a small Division III college. I was drafted in the second round. That rarely ever happens. Nope. I got to the big leagues in about 3.5 years. That rarely happens. I won Pitcher of the Year awards in AA and AAA. That never happened. That was the first person to ever do that. I got to the big leagues. I got traded. I got to a World Series. Like, I got to do all the things. Then I had a major injury, shoulder injury. I had surgery. You know, I did all the rehab. So in my 10 years that I played professional baseball, I had the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, where a lot of guys like Todd, played 17 years just for that, just for 2007. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was able to do it in less than 2 years that I was in the big league.
You know, one of the things that this is where it's part of the farewell tour. So this has been known to have bromance.
I was kind of expecting like flowers and balloons and stuff in here.
I know from you to me since I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I've been in this business almost as long as you've been alive. However, one of the things that...
I'll draw you a card so you can put it up on the wall.
Thank you. Sign it, please. Yeah. No, the one thing that I've always loved about you, and I met you during the time when I was at KOA and doing the Rockies Fantasy Camp. The one thing, man, and if you friends listening, if you can't tell, you're just a good dude. You're a great dad. Family's so important to you. I think, you know, you definitely outkicked your coverage with Pam.
Listen, it's a lot easier to be a good dude than a bad dude. It's just who I am. I've never, I only know one way.
Please, trademark that and pass it around.
I'll put it on a t-shirt and send it to you.
You've always been just a good dude, but, you know, sometimes being a nice guy just doesn't get you,
Nice guys finish last.
Well, yes, they do, and especially during COVID. So what you do now, this is a segue from your professional career. What is it about coaching for you, and what is it about trying to, give back and get these kids to maybe get to the big leagues?
Yeah, I mean, I love the game of baseball. After my injuries with the Rockies, I played some independent league baseball, and I was always very self-motivated and driven. But it started to become a job for me. And that's when I knew that it was probably nearing the end of my time. However, there were younger guys that were coming up. They were really green. And they would say, hey, Hirsch, can you come watch my bullpen, give me some advice, whatever it might be. And then they would go out and have success. And I started to get that same sense of joy and fulfillment that I used to have as a player. So that's ultimately why I decided to change hats, if you will, from being a player to doing the coaching side of things. Because after my injury, I spent 2 years trying to figure out what the hell to do with my life. This is a big problem in pro sports, not just baseball. But, if you've only ever done one thing for the entirety of your life and then you can't do that thing anymore, it's really difficult to figure out which path to transition.
Oh, my God.
To.
You're like, this is a premonition of what I have ahead starting November 6th.
You know what you're doing, though.
Well, I mean,
that passion project turns into a job.
Yeah.
And that's basically what this did, right? This was, I graduated from college. I have a multimedia degree. I like doing graphic design and web work and things like that. So I started to kind of play around in that realm. And then the more I got into it, the more I realized that it would probably take me just as long to catch up to the industry as it did for me to learn it in the first place. So, local guy here asked me to give a pitching lesson to his kid in his basement. So I did. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I found a local batting cage that had a tunnel that was the perfect size for me to start in. And that was,
were you off Leedsdale at that old Safeway?
Quebec and Leedsdale. That's right. That was Legends. If anybody's listening, remembers Legends used to be in the old Rally Auto Parts store on the south side of the mall there. But that's where I started. And realistically I started because I didn't see kids having an arm care program. Like, obviously youth baseball at that point was starting to grow. It was growing. It hasn't ballooned into the behemoth it's turned into today. But nobody was doing arm care. Nobody did any kind of like J-bands or long toss or anything like that. It was, I'd go to a tournament and the first thing guys would do is pull out the nets and start hitting. And then they'd play catch as like an afterthought. Then they'd play their, three or four or five games in the weekend. And so that's why I started initially.
And what's the name?
So now, back then, it was cleverly named the Jason Hirsch Pitching Academy.
Whoa.
That's right. I was using my pseudo-celebrity to grow my business. But now it's called FAST Performance. FAST was actually an acronym for Foundational Arm Strength Training. That was a program that I ran for kids. It was probably a 6 or 8 week program that kids would come in. We would do our armband work. We would do our long toss. We would do some mechanical stuff. We do some strength and conditioning.
The word starts to spread, right?
So, I've never really marketed it, paid for ad campaigns or flyers or anything like that. It's always been word of mouth. Mm-hmm. I always figured good kids beget other good kids, mm-hmm. or good families beget other good families. Very few times in my 10 years now that I've been doing this have I felt like I was babysitting somebody.
All right. We got to take another break for news, but I do want, before we take our break, I do want to ask our guest, Jason Hirsch, how close were you to having to say goodbye to this because of COVID and executive orders?
We were probably a month. We probably had about enough reserves for about a month before we.
So pretty close.
Yeah, we were damn close.
And do you look, we're naming names. Nobody's going to fire you, but they could fire me. But I mean, do you?
You're quitting.
I'm resigning.
Oh, sorry.
I don't follow Denver politics.
Do you blame him?
There's a lot of people I can point my fingers at, and if they're in government, I'm pointing them at them.
So that would be a yes.
Yes.
We'll take a timeout. One more segment with Jason, unless he wants to stay till 7, which would be fine with me. He's got things to do, places to go, work. He's got to go help a kid pitch. Let's take a quick timeout. We're back with Jason Hirsch as part of the farewell tour that comes up next. Welcome back. What do they call you? The Hebrew hound dog?
The Hebrew hammer.
Oh, hammer.
Jesus.
I swear to God, Jason Hirsch.
Like if Elvis was Jewish, maybe he'd be called the Hebrew hound dog.
I swear to God, when you said it earlier this hour, I thought at first, I am not lying. I thought you said your nickname was the Hebrew hamster.
Oh, no. Ultimately, it ended up being the big donkey. We made a pivot.
We're moving on. Okay. During COVID, by the way, fastcolorado.com.
Yes.
Fastcolorado.com. Fastcolorado.com. Fastcolorado.com.
Not slow, but fast.
Fastcolorado.com. Get in touch if your kid loves baseball. Okay. During COVID,
yes.
You are visited by the CDPHE official COVID police, not once, not three times, not five times, but
six times.
Six times.
Six times. My business is in a warehouse.
In an industrial area.
In an industrial area.
And you're visited six times, and you were actually shut down.
One time.
For how long?
2 weeks.
You're coaching kids and playing in an indoor environment with...
We had the doors open.
A mound.
There was proper airflow.
Airflow?
We had the cross flow going.
So how was it when reiterate that story you were telling me off the air about how
how he just walked in?
Two deputy walk in.
So we, you know, obviously our front door is open. So if you're coming to train with us, you walk through the front door, you come to the back and you start training. Well, the whatever health inspector, whatever he is, he had two Denver sheriff deputies with him. And they walked right through the front door, right through the back door, saw what was going on, and just immediately put a halt to everything. He said, "We're shutting you down." And so he had to write up his paperwork, and he was taking pictures of my clients as they were working out, and, you know, all these things.
Did you keep your cool?
I tried. I mean, as best I could. I mean, it's one of those, like, pits in your stomach kind of feelings.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, this guy's legitimately going to cause me to go out of business, right? And all these people are volunteering to be here. They're not forced. I made it abundantly clear to all of my clients, whether they were strength conditioning people or baseball people, if you don't feel safe, don't come. And the ones that were there were the ones that felt it was safe enough for them to be there.
Did you have to see kids younger than certainly us, but, you know, those that you were training, would they have to be... Please tell me the answer is no, even if you lie. No, these kids weren't wearing a mask while they were pitching.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, my God.
And even after restrictions were lifted, they continued to come in.
You had a catcher. There were catchers, correct?
No, we just throw into a...
Okay.
No, I mean, we literally
stand... Not even a catcher.
Right. So, most of the young kids... Like, when we would run a camp, these kids would be at 46, 50 feet away throwing to a net, right? And, you know... It's a 6,000 square foot training space,
and when I got shut down,
I think there were three guys there, and they literally weren't allowed to leave. They had to stay there and give their information to the health guy.
When you look back, it probably seems like a lifetime ago, and like it was last hour. Lunacy, man.
It is lunacy. It was 100% lunacy back then. But obviously hindsight makes it even more ludicrous.
And, you know, you would text me, even if I wasn't talking about COVID during COVID, you'd text me and say, here's the latest that happened.
Yeah.
You had to then kind of change. You had to put, you mentioned the signage. You put a Ring doorbell thing on.
Yep.
I locked
the front door and we got a Ring doorbell. So nobody could come in. And we put a sign on the front door. It said, this is a private training facility. You have to have a membership to be in here. Like, this isn't 24-hour lifetime. You know, this is not just anybody on the street can walk up. Like, if you're in my building, you're there for a purpose.
Were your rights infringed, do you feel?
Some form or fashion of them, absolutely. But nobody could give me a clear answer as to what they were.
And meantime, you know, there's other things like in said industrial, you know, park or warehouse area in the city of Denver and Decay. How about homelessness? Yeah. You know, there's an issue.
Yeah. I mean, we still deal with it today. I've got videos on my phone. I'll show you in the break. There's a 40-foot semi trailer just north of my building that was housing what? I have no idea. A student came back in one night. He goes, Coach, there's a truck on fire in the parking lot. I was like, what? So I went out there and this 40-foot semi-trailer is on fire. And then as I'm filming it, there are propane canisters inside that are exploding.
Oh, my God.
And one of them was big enough that it created a small mushroom cloud and shook the entire building. And so I'm on the horn with, obviously, Denver Fire and then the police. But, I mean, we probably had five different types of fires in the wintertime in the course of 2 or 3 months.
Connected to
the homeless people, yeah. I mean, it's a weekly thing where we're taking pictures and calling the police and saying, hey, you know, and we actually just talked to a District 2 officer 2 days ago, and he gave us a skinny on what Mayor Mike Johnson's new plan is.
I haven't done anything yet.
Yeah. What he's attempting to do, or basically what he's telling the police that they can do. You know, and the police are sitting there going, all right, how do we deal with this issue today? And then they deal with it. But then tomorrow's a new day, and now they have
issue. I don't blame the cops.
They're never really addressing the root issue of it. They're just kind of shuffling the deck.
Jason Hirsch, you need your own show. Common Sense Institute, going to talk about this after the top of the hour. And I'm quoting now. Over the last 3 years, Colorado has spent nearly $2 billion on homelessness. Jason Hirsch, as we wrap up, with a B. You seeing the fruits of that $2 billion?
No. Nobody is. In fact, I get a new homeless encampment. They're the converted hotels.
Is it a micro community?
Yeah. We get one of those about a mile from the facility that's being erected or constructed or renovated.
Crazy. The hour goes too fast, but are you still a Chargers fan?
San Diego Chargers fan.
That right there is the answer.
The Los Angeles Chargers of Inglewood.
They could lose on Sunday Night Football to the Chicago Bears. Do you realize that?
I just found out that I have tickets to the New Year's Eve game. Here.
Are you going to go?
Yeah. I'm probably going to freeze my balls off.
Yeah. Are you going to? And you can say that.
Yes.
Because you're talking about baseballs. Are you wearing your Philip Rivers jersey?
I don't have a Philip Rivers jersey, but I might wear my Sean Merriman jersey.
Oh,
a little lights out.
Have you ever worn your own jersey outside of a baseball field?
No, that is a massive faux pas. Jesus. I'll tell you what, I do. There are two people in this world that have a Jason Hirsch Colorado Rockies jersey, and I swear at least once a season I get a photo from a friend of mine who's like, dude, I just saw your jersey. I'm like, go say hi to them. I know exactly who they are. They're family members of a former teammate.
How old are your boys now?
They are. Brady will be 14 in 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
He's 5'8". He's enormous. And Hudson is 13.
Time just keeps on ticking.
It is.
Brother, I love you. Thank you.
Farewell.
Adios.
Best of luck in all your future endeavors. We're going to get sad and sappy here.
Yeah,
we don't want to hold hands and cry.
No, we only have 30 seconds. But I'm wondering. See, I didn't get any kind of voicemail like, you know, you've been traded to KNUS. I got it. Thank God I have a job somewhere. You've been an asset to the show. You're an awesome dude. And say hi to Pam.
Will do. Appreciate you and everything you've done for our community out here.
Thank you, brother. And thank you for being a patriot as well. Jason Hirsch. Yeah, he's a former Rocky, but he's my friend and he's an awesome on-air talent. FastColorado.com. FastColorado.com. FastColorado.com.